Lee Mack and Josie Long, then you should enter the BBC New Comedy Award 2018. If you'd like to enter, go to bbc.co.uk/newcomedyaward, fill out an application form and upload a 5-minute clip of you performing your own original comedy material. The winner will receive £1,000, a 15-minute script commission with BBC Studios Comedy and a beautiful Perspex trophy. Entries are open now and will close on Thursday the 3rd of May, that's tomorrow, 2018. Full terms and conditions can be found on the New Comedy Award website. Go on, you may be the one. And talking of new comedy, we have a brand new series from the Malawian comedian Daliso Chaponda, in which he explores the relationship between the UK and Africa. And in this first episode, Daliso looks at the history of how the relationship began in Daliso Chaponda, Citizen of Nowhere.
The UK and Africa have had a long and troubled relationship. It's had its ups and downs. We've tried everything else. So now we need to see a therapist. There's only one man qualified for this role. So, to heal centuries of misunderstanding in half an hour on a limited budget, welcome Malawi's greatest export, Daliso Chaponda.
Thank you, and welcome to the show. I'm Daliso Chaponda. Correction, I'm actually Malawi's second greatest export. I'm a bit more valuable than tobacco, but a little less valuable than babies for Madonna. You are listening to Citizen of Nowhere, the show which looks at the relationship between the UK and Africa, and I am the citizen of nowhere in the title. I'm a Malawian born in Zambia who grew up in Kenya, Swaziland, Malawi, Canada, Thailand, Somalia, and Austria. Canada kicked me out, so I moved to England. I'm an eternal outsider, which makes me the perfect mediator to mend your relationship with Africa. Think of me as a marriage counselor provided as an added extra of your license fee. Wait, before you get too excited, it won't be easy. The UK and Africa have been in a difficult relationship for centuries. Your special relationship is with America. We don't have a special relationship. Ours has been abusive. So, let's get started. Lay back. Like all troubled relationships, to work on it, you need to consider how it began.
In the beginning, there was darkness.
No. That's too far back.
All right. Back in the 16th century, Africa was seen as the dark continent.
Wait. What the hell was that? That was not the music I chose. That was the most cliche excuse for tribal music I've ever heard.
The music you chose was not dramatic enough.
You were hired to do the voices. Why did you start changing the music?
Yes, but this is your first series, and I have decades of experience. I thought it only fitting that I upgrade some of your selections.
And that was your choice?
It's got drums. What more do you want?
Okay. I was told that you were a professional. Your agent, she said you were one of the best and cheapest voiceover artists in the country.
I don't have an agent. That was me you spoke to.
Oh, God. You get what you pay for. Okay, let's try it instead with romantic music.
Romantic?
Yes, romantic.
Africa was seen as the dark continent.
Getting to know someone for the first time is always hard. There's always a gap between what you imagine and reality. This has always been a problem of mine. I have a big imagination, which is great for being a comedian, terrible for dating. When you meet someone, you go on a date maybe in a week. If I went on a date with them immediately, it would be great. I don't know them, there are no stakes. I don't care what happens. But between Monday and Friday, I start to imagine. I imagine, what if we get married? What if she meets my parents? What if we have kids? What if we have a big house? By the time we have the date, the pressure is on. If at the end of the date she says, let's not do that again, I'm like, hey, what about the kids? There is always a gap between expectation and reality. That's how it was for me when I first came to England. All I'd read was Shakespeare and Bernard Shaw and Oscar Wilde. I expected every British person to be erudite and refined. I expected tally-ho, spot of tea, rather. I was not ready for Brummies. There is always a gap between expectation and reality. When Europeans came to Africa for the first time, it was not positive expectations, it was negative. Africa was spoken of as the dark continent, the Bourneville of continents, like other continents, but with a deeper, richer taste. A few ships had made it to Africa and brought back vague tales of a dangerous place with black-skinned tribesmen. They had grown up reading about how it was full of cannibals, monsters, and savages. It's difficult for modern people to grasp how scared people were of Africa because we know about the world now. There was no 1600 version of Wikipedia. They actually had no idea what the interior of Africa was like. They knew it was dangerous. They thought of Africa the way we think of Mordor. And despite that, they went there to explore. There is a bravery to these early explorers that I must admire. Even getting on a boat and sailing was brave in itself. Remember, back then, people believed that the world was flat, but nobody was 100% sure. If I even suspected that the world was flat, I would stay very near the middle. You may be thinking, this is all history. Oh, it's not relevant to our modern enlightened perspective. But that image of the scary African continent full of ignorant savages has persisted. Proof? I'm sure you've all heard those conspiracy theories claiming that Egyptians could not have built the pyramids. It must have been aliens. Why is it more believable to some people that little green men came from the stars and built the pyramids than backwards Africans? And even a lot of people who do accept the Egyptians' achievements, they don't think that they looked like Africans. They think they looked like Elizabeth Taylor.
I was in the highly acclaimed production of Antony and Cleopatra at Old Vic with my wife as Cleopatra.
I looked at your resume. Weren't you an understudy?
I got on for two matinees when Sir Alec was down with food poisoning. I never got to the bottom of that. It's nothing to do with me.
It's not just the Egyptians. One of the biggest empires in Africa was the Empire of the Songhai, which spanned from Mali to Sudan in the 15th and 16th century. One of the most accomplished scholars was Ahmed Baba, and he wrote 40 books about philosophy and astronomy. But how could he have written books? The Europeans hadn't yet come over and taught Africans how to read. And when I say these opinions still exist, I'm not even talking about 30 years ago with somebody's slightly racist nana. Donald Trump, earlier this year, referred to African nations as
shithole countries.
And I know some of you are thinking, but that's Donald Trump. You can't possibly use him as an example. Just 15 years ago, though, a British person referred to the Congo as a place
of flag-waving pickaninnies, AK-47s, pangas hacking human flesh, and the tribal warriors breaking out in watermelon smiles.
What backwater, ignorant hick was that quote taken from, you wonder? Oh, that was your foreign minister, Boris Johnson. Honestly, though, I take issue most with watermelon smiles. Why, of all fruits, watermelon? I have maybe a mango smile, I've got a kumquat frown, and a pineapple sneer, but never, never is my expression watermelon.
It is right now, I think.
You're not helping. There is no excuse for these assumptions nowadays, but with the early explorers heading into the unknown continent, I understand. They didn't know what to expect. It's the fear we all have on a first date. Will she be funny? Will she be as pretty as her pictures? Will she give me diphtheria? Part of me admires those early adventuring seafarers trying to draw maps and discover what's behind that mountain. But gradually, the relationship changed. If the first early European adventurers were the get-to-know-you phase, things began to change when the Europeans realized that this new continent was rich. It had diamonds and gold, and they could make money off it. A relationship is never the same once money becomes a thing.
Tell me about it.
Money changes every relationship, and it definitely changed curious European explorers into traders. And the biggest change was when the European traders realized the most lucrative source in Africa was Africans.
Hold on. Are you talking about slavery?
Yes, I am.
Well, this is a comedy show. I was led to believe this was a romantic show about a troubled relationship. When I agreed to do this, I was expecting a When Harry Met Sally sort of vibe.
It is more When Harry kidnapped Sally and forced her to work for him.
Well, this is not what I signed up for.
Just read the script and cue the music. Wait. What's the music for the slave trade section? I hope it's not chains and whipping.
I make no guarantees.
Okay, let's stick with romantic music.
The slave trade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to hell. Okay. I do jokes about slavery. Lots of them. Most black comedians bring it up, especially because in the UK, we perform in front of predominantly white audiences. There is a comedy show on a boat in London. When I performed on it, I said, at least I'm telling jokes, not rowing. Post-show, somebody told me the last black comedian he saw did a similar joke. Maybe it is a cliche topic. However, I think it speaks volumes for the black and white experience that for white comedians, the most cliche subject is ordering food on airplanes. For black comedians, it is slavery.
Hang on a second before you go pointing the finger. Slavery existed in Africa well before the Europeans arrived.
Yes, it did.
Well then.
I researched this on Wikipedia. There were a few thousand slaves before the Europeans came, and they cranked it up to 60 million. They found a corner shop, turned it into a Tesco.
Point taken.
Now, I noticed some discomfort among you. You never know how to react to slavery jokes, especially if you're white. And I'll admit it, I love toying with white guilt. Last year, I took a British white woman on a date to the Liverpool Slavery Museum. She did not expect that when she swiped right. And I was just walking around pointing at stuff saying, look what your people did!
How did that go down?
I'm not seeing her anymore.
Are you still on Tinder?
Am I still on Tinder? I'm not, but you want to go see a slavery museum? Question. Has anybody here been to a slavery museum? Clap if you have. Okay, which one did you go to?
Liverpool.
You went to the Liverpool one, and the person next to you?
Whitehaven.
You went to Whitehaven. I don't actually even know. Where is Whitehaven?
In Cumbria.
They had slaves in Cumbria!
It's called Whitehaven.
It's called Whitehaven. That's a good point. But essentially, my question was this. Did you feel odd, because you're a tourist looking at suffering, did you feel odd?
I felt educated.
You felt educated, then that's the right way. That's definitely the right place. I went to the Liverpool Slavery Museum. I think it was built on a budget. Look, I think it's very important to bring it up. You can't ignore the past. You have to remember it, but do it right. They mean well, but the execution. I was walking around, and they clearly wanted to fill up space. There's a wall with pictures of random black people who have nothing to do with slavery. Jay-Z's on the wall. Why is Jay-Z on the wall of the Liverpool Slavery Museum? He's got 99 problems. Slavery's not one of them. Also, you keep walking around, and again, I'm not making this up. Did you see the glass case with the KKK costume? Yes, she saw it. There's a glass case posing like it's Armani or something with a KKK costume. And look, I've done my history. As far as I know, there was never a Scouser branch of the KKK. What would they call it, the hey, hey, hey? But as I said, look, they mean well, and if you do want to mend the relationship between the UK and Africa, you need to remember the past. So I can forgive the wall of blackness and the KKK costume. But on my way out, I realize they have a gift shop. What am I meant to buy at the Slavery Museum gift shop? Do they have keychains that are actual chains? Do they have a tie, you flip it around and now it's a noose? You can't criticize it entirely because they've got to make money. The British Museum's funding has been cut, and I'd rather slavery museums exist than not. So on my way out of the Slavery Museum, I bought something to support them. It was a little tote bag, and I love Liverpool tote bag, but I noticed it was 100% cotton. They're rubbing it in. When I was younger, I remember getting angry because every story of slavery seemed to focus on the white person saving the black people. The point of view was always white. It's like if we decided to film a movie about Oasis, but the main character was their black mate. It followed the story of me, an immigrant who met them once. How would that make you feel? Wait a second, I may be talking myself out of work here. May I just say, if there are any producers listening, if you ever do an Oasis story with a black protagonist, I'm available.
Let me know if that casting comes up. It's all gone a bit quiet recently. And I can do the accent, mate. Buzzing with that top banana. Mad for it. Love it. Johnny Mars.
For the love of God, we're recording in Manchester. They'll stone us.
What you're about, you daft apers? They like it. They're laughing. I'm good at voices, me. Chips and gravy, mate. Pale ale.
Stop, stop! The first group to speak against slavery were the Quakers. In the 17th and 18th century, they and other faith groups condemned slavery, but it took decades because slavery was so ingrained and profitable. But over the course of 18 years, William Wilberforce, an MP from Yorkshire, was instrumental in passing the Slavery Abolition Act.
I can do Yorkshire as well. Van Oors. Bayek.
No. 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 Of Parliament was passed on 25th March 1807, but it took a long time to actually come into effect. And when I mentioned the end of slavery, I do have to give you props, England. You decided to end slavery long before the Spanish, Portuguese, and other dabblers in the slave trade. Also, your navy was a big part of ending slavery. Once it was outlawed, your navy enforced it, attacking slave ships, closing down slave ports. And if that was the end of the relationship, I'd say we'd be in a good place. I wouldn't go so far as to say all is forgiven, but you did the slavery thing, realized you were wrong, you admitted it, and started making up for it. That's the process for mending all relationships. Well done, England. And just when things were looking up, when we were ready to really work on the relationship, colonialism.
Ah, colonialism. My grandfather had a lovely farm in Nairobi, you know.
Why am I not surprised?
Slavery, I'm totally with you. Definitely a regrettable epoch. The British Empire, we brought education, medicine, scientific knowledge, and decency to dark places. It's all very well to be all critical, but would you rather be dressed in a loincloth, dying because of toothache?
You have one job, one job!
Fine.
Just introduce the next section.
Colonialism.
Colonialism, for any of you who are unfamiliar with the exact definition, is when the British, the Belgians, the French, well, you and most of your ex-EU mates, took over African countries. It all started because slavery was over, but there was still a lot of money to be made in Africa. And hey, maybe you couldn't own Africans anymore, but you could always pay them really, really badly. And the main push behind colonialization was not the British government. It was traders. Companies like the East India Trade Company took over entire nations. It's bonkers to imagine. Trading companies. It's like if you heard Coca-Cola had just taken over North Wales. Of course, immediately Pepsi would take over South Wales. And then they would insist to us that it's a very different nation, even though to us they taste exactly the same. It always does mind boggle me that Britain took over so much of the world. Because you're tiny. You're tiny, but you ended up with India, most of Africa, Australia, Canada, a lot of America. It's like if you showed up at a kindergarten and everybody told you, you see that scrawny little kid with the glasses? Yeah, he's the school bully. He's dangerous. It was a mad scramble for Africa. All the different European powers argued over who would own which part of Africa, entirely ignoring the fact that people lived there. It's like if two estate agents showed up at your house and started arguing. I got here first, it's mine! I'm gonna knock down that wall and turn it into a flats. No, it's mine! And when you interrupted and said, hey, I live here, they just ignored you and kept on arguing. The Belgian king, for example, wanted to bestow a mountain to his wife.
My wife loved a good mountain.
What did you just say?
Mountains. I always enjoyed taking her up the Alps.
Well, anyway, the borders were arbitrary. It still causes problems in Africa because different tribes would be bundled together and called a country, even if they hated each other and had been at war for generations. Imagine somebody took Manchester and Liverpool, told them they were now one nation, and all their football teams would be fused together in some kind of Frankenstein monster. Like a quarter United, quarter City, quarter Everton, quarter Liverpool. Mary.
Could do scouts as well. La. What are yous looking at?
Please don't. After trade came religion. It's a package. Before the Europeans did it, Arabs had done it. They traded silk, salt, and Islam. The British did cotton, gold, and Christianity. And because the colonialists believed that the Africans were mindless savages, it was easy for them to convince themselves that they were helping. I guess it happens in every relationship, that moment where one partner decides that they can fix the other one, when they force you to change your dress sense and stop seeing your friends, make you speak a foreign language and murder you for your religious beliefs. The colonialists thought, without us, these savages will be doomed to hell. What was that phrase you used in a loincloth? Dying of a toothache.
Yes, and barbecuing your relatives. Not that you'd be able to eat them with that toothache.
I give up. That, to me, was the most obnoxious part of it. Colonialists felt like they were helping. The colonized had no choice but to listen because you had guns in power. You forced us to become Christians. You forced us to learn English. I mean, I grew up in Africa, but I went to British schools in Zambia, Somalia, Kenya. And what I've realized about those British schools is they were more English than England. It was literally like I was going to Hogwarts, Africa. We had a school uniform, which was the exact replica of British uniforms with the gray sweaters and blue blazers. One thing, though, England is a cold country. Why the hell were we wearing thick sweaters and blazers on the equator? My schools tried to be British in every way. In the cafeteria, they tried to replicate British recipes. And if there's one thing the British should not be exporting, it's your cuisine. One thing I only realized later about those British schools is they never mentioned colonialism. They never mentioned the slavery. The very reason there was a British school in the first place, and it never came up. Not once! It was like one of those family secrets you all agree to ignore. Kids, Uncle Brian and that man he lives with, they're just good friends. A question. Who here was educated in England? Did you learn about the British Empire? Put up your hand if you remember.
Well, they must have seen Zulu.
Yes, this person over there.
Yes, yeah, we did the Raj mainly.
Oh, you did the Raj. And then the other question is, on the flip side, did you learn any African history?
I had a friend who was a kid who came from Zambia, so yeah.
But you learned it on the playground.
Yeah, on the playground.
Now, I've actually got a question here. What do you know about African history? I just want to know, if you can think of a fact about African history you know, put your hand up. Like anything.
I know that Mount Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti.
I only bring it up because I went to British schools, first one in Zambia, second one in Somalia, third one in Kenya. So, very clearly, in Africa. I was learning English, French, and Latin. No African African languages. No Swahili, no Somali. My school thought there's more chance that I'm going to run into the ghost of Julius Caesar than a Maasai warrior in Africa. And in history, we were learning about William the Conqueror, Henry VIII. We did not learn any African history at all. In hundreds of subtle ways, my schools were telling me that my culture was shit and yours was awesome. And then I moved here 10 years ago and I heard people saying, why do all these immigrants come here? Well, you spent decades telling me it was the greatest place. Where did you think I was going to go? You don't want me here, you should have taught me Japanese. Now, the British explorers who saw the Africans as ignorant savages and sought to purge their Africanness succeeded. In my case, they succeeded 100%. As I said, I went to British schools. I read British books. My favorite book was The Hobbit. My favorite TV show was Blackadder. If the colonial powers were trying to turn Africans into something, that something was me. Even when I criticize the history of colonialization and slavery, I do it in English. I have no choice. It's the only language I speak. Going to British school after British school made me gradually forget my vernacular. And even now, given the choice of Oscar Wilde or Chinua Achebe, I'd probably choose Oscar. I could have gone to the government school which taught African languages, but why would parents want to send me to those schools? The British private schools had a higher level of education. Of course they wanted to make me able to secure a future. And the sad thing is they were right. My life is much better than most Malawians. I'm here in England, on the BBC, telling jokes, toying with your white guilt. I'm living well, I'm a success. But at the same time, I'm not a quote unquote African. Well, I am African, I still have the blood, but if you took a colonial captain and an African slave and you compared them to me, yes, if you could see me, you'd think I'm more like the African because I'm black. But this is the radio, all you can hear is my voice. Like this, you would think that I was the colonizer. And in your relationship with Africa, the approach often taken is teach them your language, make them adopt your political system, your religion. This is not the best way to move the relationship forward, as you end up with weirdos like me who don't fit in Africa and will keep moving here and giving your right-wingers embolisms. I'm sure any of you who have tried to change your partner in a romantic situation knows that either you do it and you prefer the old version, or you can't do it. You can offer your opinion when they do things you disagree with, but in the end, you have to just accept them for who they are.
My wife wanted me to play less golf. She left me, you know.
I'm still doing a show.
She was my one true love.
We can talk about this later.
You spent the last half hour criticizing the British, and I listened through all that.
Yes, I admit it. That this last half hour, I have been very hard on the British. When I first started writing this show, I wanted to be balanced and criticize both sides so that together we could move on. But the thing is, I decided to look at the start of Africa and England's relationship with slavery and colonialism. It was pretty hard to see the other side of the argument and have a, so here's why slavery was actually good section. So today, all the lessons were to the British, but next episode, I'll be looking at the members of both societies who hate the relationship.
Well, that sounds much better.
Until next time, this has been Citizen of Nowhere. Now, tell me, did she really leave you for golf?
To be fair, the money was drying up after I was written out of Howard's Way. But it was mainly the golf.